Hi, welcome to the Life After 50 show. I'm Katherine Watson, and I'll be your host today. The Life After 50 show, it's what you need to know for the second half of your journey. I am here today, sponsored by FindHoustonSeniorCare.com. FindHoustonSeniorCare.com is a web directory for the greater Houston area that helps you connect with and learn about all types of elder care businesses that can help you when you're trying to care for an aging loved one. It's a one-stop shop to help you find the care you need for that aging parent or somebody else that you care deeply about. And we've created the only care home list in the city. Our care home list is updated weekly. You can find out who has availability and openings in these small assisted living homes. So Find Houston Senior Care will help you connect with elder law attorneys, home care companies, and small assisted living care homes. We're your one-stop shop. Today, I am here. We've got a great topic, blended families. And I know there's a lot of you out there. It's what you need to know. And though this is a topic that really is not age specific, a 25-year-old may need this information as well as the 80-year-old. As we do get older, there's more chance that you may need to put some steps in place. And we're going to talk to an attorney today. Elizabeth Hilbin with the Hilbin Law Firm is going to be joining us to discuss what you need to know if you are a blended family. She's seen all too many times families that did not plan for future events. So she's here to help us today, and I'm going to bring her up in just a minute. I've known Elizabeth for quite some time now. She is in the Cypress, Texas area. And an interesting fact about Elizabeth, she wrote her first will in the fifth grade. Can you believe that? She willed her puppy Licorice to her friends Karen and Kendall. And she liked the assurance that her wish to have her best friends take care of Licorice if she couldn't would be carried out. That was important to her. So even at that young age, she realized that a will could guarantee who would be in control of things that were important to her. Thus, her interest in estate planning was born, and we're lucky to have Elizabeth in our community. So I'm going to bring her up now so she can talk to you about this important subject. And there she is. Hi, Elizabeth. How are you?
I'm well. It's also my interest in puppies, of course, too.
Of course, our fur babies. Before we get started, I do want to let everybody know this is Cyber Monday. So if we have any technical difficulties, please bear with us. I know we seem to be having a little bit slow response. Our words may not be syncing up with our mouths, but just bear with that and understand it is Cyber Monday. Take time out from shopping and pay attention to this broadcast because we've got some great information for you today. Elizabeth, you see a lot of people that are blended families, right?
That's correct. I sure do.
It's pretty common in our day and age. And if you're not a blended family, you need to have a lot of these things like wills and trust in place anyway. But if you are a blended family, there seems to be a lot more challenges with that, right?
Absolutely. And one of the things people don't think about is even though you're not in a blended family right now, that actually may occur when you lose possibly your spouse and you end up remarrying later in life. I have some clients that got married in their late 80s, and that can happen. Mm-hmm. And so we want to make sure that we can address those issues, even if they're not an issue for us right now.
Good idea. Yeah. So should somebody have a will or a trust?
Well, that's actually a very common question in any estate planning field is, do I need a will or do I need a trust? And that's when people call our office, they actually ask that question quite frequently. And so a will or a trust, they sometimes will do the exact same thing. They're really tools or documents that will allow us to transfer our stuff, our assets, to the people that we love. A will is a document that we address three things. Who's in charge of my stuff? Who's getting my stuff? And when are they going to get it? Typically, when people do wills, and I would say probably 85% of the clients that we see end up doing wills, they'll address those, they'll put that in writing, and they'll put that on the shelf. A trust is a little different because a trust is also a document, but where it's designed that we actually put things inside of it. So we retitle our accounts to a trust. A will goes through probate. A trust does not go through probate. Wills are public. Trusts are private. Look at a trust like a management tool, if you will. So you're going to put your assets inside of it, and then you're going to design what should happen to those assets going forward.
Okay. All right. So is there one that seems to be more commonly executed for someone who is of a blended family?
I would say they're not really common necessarily for a blended family or not blended family. Trusts are typically used for people who have property outside of Texas, people that they may be disinheriting, or perhaps people who have just had a bad experience with the court system. Now, many times we will build a trust within a will, and that would be designed specifically for a blended family. So it may be a situation where we have left our property to our spouse, but we don't want our spouse to use it all. We want them to be cared for, but we want to guarantee that there's actually property left for our children after our spouse passes away. And so that's a trust that you can build inside of a will, or you can actually build a trust within a trust. And that's done quite frequently for blended families.
Okay. What are some of the challenges that you've seen families come to you with that maybe have not done the proper planning and something has happened?
I would say the main challenge that people come to me in a blended family situation is really just not knowing how to even bring up the topic with their spouse. And so what I do when I get blended families, I always tell people in my workshops, and I do workshops every week, you know that, I tell my families, look, I'm from a blended family. And I find that to be exciting because it really gives us an opportunity to do some creative planning. But the big challenge that people get into is not really knowing how to talk to their spouse about what their needs are. And so when I bring up the topic, I say, well, how are you going to take care of your children from your prior relationship? It's as if I've broken that ice for that family. Mm-hmm. And so it just opens the floodgate of at least conversation and discussion. And we're able to get through those hard topics because I've brought them up versus them bringing them up.
I think that's a really good point there. And I do want to mention, Elizabeth does, for those of you who don't know and are in the Houston area, she does workshops every week at her office. And they're wonderful. She has daytime ones that are an hour long. So they're lunch and learn, in and out. You get some great information. And then from there, you can decide what the next steps are. And then in the evening, she has some that are a little bit longer and a little bit more involved. They're about 2 hours. So whatever fits for you, you really need to go. And I'm going to put her website up here. It's the Hilbin Law Firm. And for those of you who may be listening at a later date on the podcast, that's Hilbun lawfirm.com. Again, that's Hilbun lawfirm.com. And you can go to that website. There's a tab that says workshops. Pull that up and it'll tell you when and where. Just make sure you RSVP. Because the space is limited, and you will not regret it. It is not a dry workshop. Elizabeth keeps it fun, but you get really some great information, things that you probably hadn't even thought about. She'll address issues that you're thinking about, but she'll bring up some things that you hadn't even considered and didn't know about. So I really urge you to take the time to do that. It's so important, and it'll make a world of difference to any family that you leave behind. Okay. So, Elizabeth, I know another question that a lot of people ask is, how do I balance the interests of my children and my spouse? And that is hard, even if you're not a blended family. You know, we're trying to make everybody happy, and we're trying to get our own needs met. So what's your suggestion? What's your advice to people like this?
Well, typically I begin that conversation with the estate planning pyramid that I build. And at the base of the estate planning pyramid is really you and your spouse. People think that the family or the children should be on that base. But generally speaking, we really can't take care of our children until we've taken care of ourselves and our spouse. And we have legal duties to take care of our spouses as well. So in a blended family, the first question is, do you have a prenuptial agreement? How old are the children? Are they minors? Do they have any special needs? Are we going to need to support them? Are we going to need to ask them to support us? Those are questions that we're going to be looking at as we do the estate planning, but really looking at what are our needs? Because we know, and you know from this, our society, is that long-term care planning has had a huge effect on our estate planning. We need to figure out how we're going to actually take care of ourselves and our spouse if we have a long-term care illness or disease, and what does that look like? And so those are some of the things that we have to start balancing. And when I'm talking to folks, I kind of look at, okay, well, if you're going to give everything to your spouse and then with a trust, say, and that spouse then will be able to use that during their lifetime, and then it goes to your children, well, heck, your children could be 80, 90 years old before they actually inherit anything from you. So maybe a better way to do it is take a look at what are the resources now? What are the assets? Do we have insurance that perhaps we can look at? Maybe we carve off part of that 401k for the children from the prior relationship so they actually receive something from the parent. Mm-hmm. In my experience, I actually haven't seen people get upset about the amount that was left to them. It was more typically that they didn't get anything from their parent. Mm-hmm. And so when we're talking about personal belongings, we'll talk a little bit more about that later. But we want to look at, is there any opportunity here that we can carve off either part of a 401k or a life insurance policy or something to leave to those kids from the prior marriage, so that they don't feel that they were just discarded in this new marriage situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see where that would be important, especially, you know, I have friends whose parents remarried much later in life. And a lot of times they, you know, some of them had a lot of difficulty accepting the new relationship and then worried that maybe the new spouse's children were getting everything and they were getting kind of shoved aside. So, yeah, I can see where, you know, it's hard enough. I grew up in a family of six kids and we were not a blended family. But let me tell you, it was difficult with all the different personalities and everybody, you know, trying to just, you know, get it together and accept one another's opinions and ideas and beliefs. And, you know, It's tough. So I can imagine in a family where you have some children from one marriage, some from another, and maybe some from the marriage of those two people. So you may have a yours, mine, and ours situation.
Right. And one of the things that we've seen, or one of the things that we at the Hillman Law Firm like to see, is communication. So I kind of say it's the three C's: communication, clarity, and copies of documents. So a lot of times in blended families, perhaps you're doing your planning, but your children have no idea what's going on. Now, obviously, this is a case-by-case basis, but boy, it makes the children feel a lot better to know that their parent has actually addressed the issues head-on in the beginning of the planning stages. And when we're talking about communication and clarity of communication, that goes across the board, not just the estate planning and the money side of things, but also on long-term care illness issues, directives to physicians, life support. What are your, you know, do you want to live in a nursing home or not? Do you want to stay at home as long as possible? I believe if our communication with our children is clear and concise, and it's kind of across the board with that new spouse and the children, there's less chance of really having all of those disputes and all those disagreements later on.
I think that is exactly right. So many families just steer away from having these important conversations. And this is a great time of the year because we're gathering together for the holiday season. We're families are coming in that maybe live out of town that are coming together. We're getting together more and having big family meals. Now, I'm not saying that this should be your Christmas meal conversation, but maybe during the course of that holiday, you carve out a little bit of time and just have that conversation. It's important to have.
Well, I don't know that it's not a Christmas meal conversation. I mean, Christmas is all about, you know, for me, you know, the gift of Jesus, but it's a gift to our family to have all that put aside and the burden that people carry by not talking about it can really interfere with just the openness of the family unit. And so it may be actually something that we talk about more at our holiday dinners, because that may be the only time we get to see our kids. If you know what's kind of going on, is our kids don't necessarily live nearby. They have their own families to visit with and to have Christmas with. So they might not, you know, be there, but for a couple of hours. And it sure would be nice to kind of just dispel all the unknowns that are going on with a new relationship that might be happening.
Yeah. So do you ever have situations where you have the whole family come in to your office and talk about these things?
Absolutely. So if my clients will come to me ahead of time, which is sometimes a challenge, I always say, you know, before you shoot the next door neighbor's dog or cut down their tree, call me first and let's see if we can't work something out. So yeah. I tell my clients that if you're going to remarry, let's sit down and talk about it. And we worked with a couple of families before that we actually sat down with the husband or the fiance, I guess my client and his fiance. And this was a couple that was in their second marriage in their late 60s. And we sat down with her financial advisor, his financial advisor, and then the oldest child from each home, because that happened to be the spokesperson. And we actually did a little conversation with those family members so that we could actually create a plan that works. Mm-hmm. And one of the really exciting things is there's a judge that is not taking the bench in January, Judge Farr, and he's a family law judge. He's going to be doing some mediation. So we're looking forward to possibly doing some of those family mediations with families ahead of time so that we can create solutions for them. Mm-hmm. So that they don't get into a will contest or a guardianship dispute later on in life.
Mm-hmm. That sounds really interesting. That sounds really good. So what does estate planning cost? I know a lot of people are afraid that maybe they can't afford this and what should they do? And just can we talk about that?
Absolutely. So I can tell you what it costs if you don't do it. And that is a lot of money in attorney's fees and a lot of heartache through the whole process. But costs. So at our law firm, we do everything as a flat fee case. And so typically our basic will packages, even in a blended family, if we're not going to be doing any complex trust drafting, are about $1,500 to $1,600, depending on what provisions that you actually want into the document. If you're going to do complex planning because you have a fairly large estate, then of course you're going to pay more for that, but everything is going to be flat fee either way. And many times, if not most times, we can actually do an estate plan for a blended family for the same price that we do an estate plan for an intact family. So it works out pretty good. So if you're budgeting, I would say between $1,500 and about $1,800 to do your estate planning through our law firm. And I would say across the board, it's fairly the same with other firms.
Okay. All right. I think that gives people a good idea, because most people think estate planning, and they also think a lot of times estate planning is something for only the wealthy. Let's dispel that myth.
Yes, that's a scary one, because I have a lot of people that come to me and say, well, I don't have anything, so I don't need a will. Well, estate planning is not just a will. Estate planning is all the other documents that you need to have in place, like medical powers of attorney, financial powers of attorney, directives to physicians. Are you going to be buried? Are you going to be cremated? And we all know we are going to die, so we want to put all of those documents in place. But what becomes complex is when you think that you don't have anything. That's not really true, because you typically will have things like 401ks or life insurance or a car or maybe even an apartment. Like, who's supposed to be able to go into your apartment and clean it out if something were to happen? Mm-hmm. Who's supposed to get your final paycheck if you're working? Do you have a beneficiary on your 401k? So those are the things that we talk about in our workshops, mm-hmm. the importance of funding all those documents properly.
Okay.
And one scary thing I want to bring up: in a blended family without an estate plan. So I hear this a lot. Well, she's my wife, so then she should just get the house. And in a blended family, that's not how it works in the state of Texas. So if you're married and you have children from a prior relationship, your house, if it's purchased during the marriage, is community property. And so that house will be owned 50% by your spouse and 50% by your children. And so that becomes problematic, because it's really not the children that your spouse will be dealing with. It's typically their mother, your ex-wife, that they'll be dealing with. And so we see a lot of, oh my gosh, I can't believe I own this house with my husband's children from a prior relationship. It's heartbreaking, really.
Yeah, that can be a sticky situation for sure.
Yeah. Yes.
So, I didn't know that. That's something I did not realize. So if you don't have your proper paperwork in place, you could be in for a world of hurt.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And then you could be in a situation where the children are monitoring what you do with that house for the rest of your mm-hmm. life. Yeah. Because you do have the right to live in the house until you die, but the children have that remainder interest in it. So it can be problematic.
Yep. I can see that. So how do you handle disagreements within the family? If you're trying to do this planning and you know how you want it to be, but disagreements pop up because there's a lot of personalities involved, and there's a lot of sibling rivalry involved and different things like that. How do you handle those disagreements?
Well, in our office, what we try to do is actually bring the family in to discuss it. So we start with the husband and the wife, and we try to figure out what are the disagreements, and then really unpack what's below the disagreement, because typically it's not a money issue. It might be some unresolved anger or conflicts that happen because of the relationship. So many times we will use outside resources to help us resolve that. So we connect very closely with Shield Bearer, which is a counseling service here in the Cypress area. And many times we'll refer clients to that organization to get some family therapy or some family discussions open for that. And then, of course, as we spoke earlier with the potential mediations. We work with several mediators that would help our families kind of work through those issues. We've used the Myrna Gregory is a mediator we've used. And of course, Judge Farr will be doing that. And we think that possibly some of the probate judges that are stepping down from the bench this year might be headed to that mediation arena. And we're going to see more of that.
I think that is a huge area that needs to be addressed. I just do, as our population continues to age and we continue to have more families in these situations. Maybe they're caring for aging parents. Maybe they're trying to figure out what to do for themselves or their spouse, and maybe they have a blended family. We need to have some help a lot of times in sorting through all of these difficulties with the other people that are involved.
And that's another thing that we use as well, especially for maybe our clients that are aging up. We use the services of CNS Care Management. There's Cindy Hartman, and we also use Doug Rochelle with Sundance Care. We use those are care managers. They have a social work background, and they will actually help us resolve those conflicts between the children on children of this marriage and children of that marriage, and who's taking care of who and who's paying and what money are we going to use to pay for the care, things of that nature.
Right, right. Yeah, I've seen situations. I had a friend who the family got into a dispute because the wife had Alzheimer's and she was needing a lot of care, and it was going to cost, you know, but the children of the husband were not happy about spending that money on her, and they didn't want all of their inheritance that they saw going towards the care of her. And so it just created a lot of issues within the family. And it was sad because it was hard on him. He was dealing with enough that he was losing his new wife to this horrible disease. And here he had the children, you know, giving him grief over it too. So it was a difficult situation.
And that's where we can be creative in our planning as well, because we can look at what are the assets and where do they come from? And if it's a wife that has Alzheimer's, perhaps we use, you know, we use her 401k to pay for her to start with. And then we look at what other assets that we want to use for care to kind of keep everything balanced, as you will.
Right, right, right. Well, Elizabeth, unfortunately, we are running out of time. It always goes way too fast when you come on because you've got so much good information. But I really appreciate you coming on today. I want to put your website up on the show again. It's the Hilbun Law Firm. So that's Hilbun, H-I-L-B-U-N, lawfirm.com. You can reach out to Elizabeth there. You can attend one of her workshops. I highly, highly recommend you do. If you're not in this area, reach out to an attorney, an estate planning attorney, an elder law attorney in your area, and see if they don't have some workshops that you can attend. So, Elizabeth, is there anything else that you want to tell everybody before we go?
Well, mainly is that, you know, the new year's coming up. So if this is still on that list, that to-do list for your new year's resolutions, there's still some time to get that done in 2018. So looking forward to meeting everybody.
All right. Great. Thank you so much for being on the show. I'm going to put Elizabeth down in the lobby and I'm back again. So we had a great show today. Next week, we have got a financial planner that's coming on. Daryl Lyons with the PAX Financial Group is going to be talking about helping the middle class transition into retirement. That's a good topic that I know a lot of our listeners are going to enjoy. And I look forward to seeing you next week. This is Catherine Watson, and this is the Life After 50 show. It's what you need to know for the second half of your journey. Have a great day, everyone.